All right. Hello and welcome, everyone. This is Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and we are here today for our INE open office hours. And this is where we come together to chat about cases, or you ask me questions, whether it's about the materials, whether it's about a particular person that you're working with. Whatever, anything goes, whether it's about your business, about some opportunity you have business-wise, I'm open to anything that you want to talk about. That's related, of course, to our topic at hand, which is nutritional endocrinology and functional medicine and integrative practice. So this works is you can raise your hand with a *2 on your telephone keypad, and I will open your line. And I see Allie has her hand up, and she also submitted a case, and it looks like Jane has one, too. So I'm going to start with Allie. Hi, Allie.
Hello.
Hi. I'm glad you're here. I see that your case, I just didn't read the whole thing through, so I'm going to read it quickly. I'll read it out loud to everybody. So you're working with a female client, age 37, trying to get pregnant. Identified that she has cortisol levels in line with stage 3 adrenal fatigue. Concerned that she might need to be reviewed by a physician as she has sharp pains in her leg, which I've read could indicate Addison's. What should we do? So did you, when you say she has cortisol levels, did you do a 4-point cortisol test, or is that from a blood test?
It's from the 4-point cortisol saliva test.
Okay. And how low were her numbers?
Let me open them now.
Sure. Because the way that we differentiate Addison's from adrenal fatigue, and some people who were in a end state adrenal fatigue where their numbers are across the bottom, you would want them to be evaluated to make sure they don't have Addison's disease. But certain levels would not indicate that.
Okay. It will take me just a minute to pull those up.
Okay. So while you do that, it seems that she has cryptosporidian antigens. And that was with the stool test?
Yes.
A light overgrowth of Candida and E. coli. To address the parasite, she's taken Paracid Fort and Candicid Fort. She was also taking liver support, but was causing a headache and slight dizziness, so she discontinued. In her regular regime, she takes a prescription multivitamin with added iron, magnesium, and 4K IUs of vitamin D. Okay. So what makes her take a prescription multivitamin? Because my first thought is, in general, not that this might be related to what she's experiencing, but the prescription ones tend to be really poor quality. They tend to be forms of the nutrients that are not well absorbed. They're not the active forms, but they're more the cheap forms. And they usually have colorings and all kinds of fillers and binders and, you know, Blue Lake number X and red dye number 4 and all kinds of stuff like that.
Yeah, I think she was taking it just because her doctor, of course, gave it to her initially because she had low iron. Mm-hmm. So she was taking it for anemia. So it was, yeah, the multivitamin that was like fortified with an extra like high dose of iron.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so whenever somebody comes in and they're on a specific supplement, ask if you could read the ingredients and then caution them about certain things that are red flags, especially in pregnancy. You don't want somebody who's trying to get pregnant to have things in her multivitamin that are toxic.
Mm.
And they'll tell you they're not toxic, of course, but they think a lot of things aren't toxic. So most prescription medications have added fillers and binders. Some of them have gluten as a binder. They'll just say flour. Some of them have cornstarch. But in general, anything that's prescription, you just want to be careful about and have her take a look at that. And the iron, the forms of iron that they usually give in those is, goodness gracious, I forget, ferric oxide or something like that, which is not that well absorbed and gives constipation. So you just want to be careful about those kinds of things.
So what form of iron should she take for her low levels?
Yeah, how low are her levels and what's her ferritin like?
Great question. It was last tested, I think, in January. So I guess we're probably well past the time where we should probably have her look at it again.
Yes. 3 months with iron. So if somebody has iron deficiency anemia and you put them on a regime 3 to 4 months, because that's the time it takes for the red blood cells to completely recycle. And her doctor didn't asked her to go back and get it retested?
No, she's had kind of an ongoing relationship with her doctor. She's been trying to get pregnant for about 8 or 9 years now.
Oh, no.
And her, the doctor that she was working with eventually just kind of like literally gave up on her and said like, hey, what we're doing is not working. We've tried everything I can think of. Like, I don't know what to do with you. Like, your body's not responding. I don't know.
So what are all the things she tried? Did she try the typical Clomid and various and sundry drugs, Pregnenol, and did she try IVF? Did she try not in vitro, but artificial insemination?
She hasn't tried any assisted reproductive therapies at all. She doesn't really feel like they're a good fit for her.
Yep.
She has been on metformin for PCOS in the past. She was taking that for about 7 years. And
does she still have indications of the insulin resistance going on?
In her like descriptions, I would say yes.
Okay. So have you done, or she asked you to do, have you looked at her blood for like things like hemoglobin A1C and fasting insulin, fasting blood sugar, postprandial insulin?
No.
Okay, so those are things. So this history is unfolding. So she has a history of PCOS, which is something that causes difficulties with conceiving, number one. So the first thing you really want to work on with her, and the easiest thing to work on with her, is the adrenal fatigue and the PCOS. So give me the numbers on the adrenal so I can tell you whether she should be evaluated for ADSENS.
So and her morning cortisol was 7.3.
Okay.
Her noon was 4.7, her afternoon was 1.1, and her evening nighttime is 1.4.
Okay, so I wouldn't call her flatlined. 14.4. Yeah, I've seen totals in the single digits. So I would not think that she would have ADSENS with numbers like that. Usually with ADSENS, what they do is a stimulation test where they actually go in and give high dose ACTH to stimulate the adrenal cortex to produce, and if it doesn't produce, then we know that there's some adrenal failure going on, because ADSENS really is an end state where it's just failed, it just can't do it. It doesn't sound that way to me, especially since she's got the 7 and the 4. I mean, these are somewhat decent. I've seen them as low as, 2s and 1s at those times. So I wouldn't really be as concerned about ADSENS. Tell me more about her sharp pains in her leg.
She said they've been going on for as long as she can remember. It doesn't seem to be triggered by anything in particular, but she does work on a farm, so she is standing most of the day. But again, she's not quite sure that it's related to that. She just doesn't know. She just knows that as long as she can remember, she's had random, really sharp pains between like her knee and her hip, what feels like in the muscle tissue.
Okay, front or back?
I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, so these are good questions. So just make a list of the kind of questions to ask. Okay, so I'm not, certainly send her to get that tested, but I think that they would have tested her for that kind of stuff, but maybe not. But I don't think that's as much as concern. My big concern with this woman trying to get pregnant is that she's got adrenal fatigue, she's got parasites, she's got blood sugar imbalances, right? So all three of those things need to be addressed. So looking at her gut, first of all, I'd start with what's going on with her diet. Is she on like a really good gut repair kind of a diet, or is she on kind of more of a standard American gluten and dairy and sugar and processed foods and all that?
She was not doing so great with her food, but after we started working together, she's been doing a lot better. She's been, eating more consistently. Like before, she didn't have any desire for food. She wasn't really hungry, so sometimes she'd often skip meals. So she's at a place now where she's consistently eating breakfast, lunch, and dinner. She's not completely gluten-free, but it's definitely a huge step in the right direction. Her breakfasts are gluten-free and most of her dinners are gluten-free. And on occasion, she'll eat like something during lunch that isn't fabulous. But again, relative to where she was, she's making marked improvements.
Okay. So have you explained to her the importance of going gluten-free? Because first of all, gluten-free can be has been shown in many, many studies to be associated with infertility. So you might want to look up some of those articles and share those with her.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because if she's motivated to get pregnant, she's motivated to do whatever it takes. Obviously, she doesn't want to do the interventions, which is good. So dietarily, plus anything with gluten in it is a blood sugar disaster, right? Mm-hmm. So if she's been on metformin, she's had insulin resistance, you want to get her off of a flour, all flour products. I don't care if it's quinoa flour. She should be off all flour products. So she should be more on the blood sugar balancing type of a program, a low glycemic, higher fat, higher protein kind of a diet. To get that under control. So the things I would have you look at would be, number one, her fasting glucose to see if it's in the, you know, ideal range of in the 80s, 70s or 80s. I would look at her hemoglobin A1C, and if she had been treated for a PCOS with metformin, the chances are good that they've been monitoring her her hemoglobin A1C, but they may not really be keeping it in what is the ideal range for her to be optimally healthy and to support a pregnancy. So there oftentimes will say, yeah, as long as it's, you know, six or, you know, in the sixes versus the sevens, you're doing okay. But that's not true. You really want her hemoglobin A1C to be in the low fives or, you know, 4.8 to 5.2. I like it between 4.5 and 5, but somewhere in that range.
When it was checked in January, I think it was a 9.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. So clear. This she needs. You need to take her through the B4 Be Gone insulin. You know, all the IRSPT type stuff, and get that under control. Because until she gets that under control, she's not going to get pregnant. You know, that's uncontrolled PCOS. That's like close to diabetic. Right. Mm-hmm. It might even be diabetic. So I would look at what's her fasting glucose. Do you have the fasting glucose from January? Mm-hmm. My guess is it's going to be pretty high.
I don't think I saw that in her paperwork.
Given she's got a 9 on a hemoglobin A1C, my guess is that you're going to see her fasting glucose certainly over 100. And my guess is closer to the 1 teens with that kind of number. So that's the biggest place to work.
And you would say that that's even more important than the parasite from like a starting place?
You know, I think they kind of go hand in hand, but that, I mean, given she's, the pregnancy is what she wants. A lot of people get pregnant with a parasite.
Okay.
Right? A lot of people will. Few people would get pregnant if they've got active PCOS that's not under control.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Gluten contributes to miscarriage. It contributes to infertility. So I'd look up some articles just to give her some ammunition. Mm-hmm. To get that, explain to her the connection between infertility and the out of control blood sugar. Mm-hmm. I'd also be checking her MTHFRs because it very commonly is associated with infertility and miscarriage, which means you're going to have to really look at her B vitamins and vitamin B12 and all that. You could get a sense of that. I mean, you could do a homocysteine, which would be elevated if she had, may or may not be, but if she actively is in an MTHFR, if it's there and it's active and she's not getting enough folate and B12, B6, then her homocysteine will probably be elevated. So that's like an indirect marker. But there's a lot you can do without even a lot of testing, just by getting her down to the basic mm-hmm. foundational and low glycemic foods. And if she's open to getting her own glucose meter, tell her, you know, if you can keep your blood sugar in this range, she's not.
I tried to with her. She's not interested. Yeah.
All right. Then you show her the diet for the 30-day. You know that chart, the one-page chart we have for the 30-day metabolic reset? It's like, here's what you can eat. Here's what you can't eat. Here's what is questionable. You just mm-hmm. have her eat just the green on that. And you have her do that for a month. And you make sure that she's on things like chromium and magnesium and maybe even alpha-lipoic acid to get her glucose under control.
What was the third thing you said? Chromium, magnesium, and?
Alpha-lipoic acid.
I'm not familiar with that.
Oh, you know what would be awesome for her? Would probably be berberine. Because berberine works at getting, it rivals metformin at getting the blood sugars under control, but it works by a different mechanism, and it actually helps to get the microbiome established because it kills off a lot of the bad guys in the gut. So it's an antimicrobial. So that could help with the parasitic thing. You want to be careful if she's actively trying to get pregnant that she doesn't do that if she does do it, a parasitic thing. Like if you put her on antiparasitic herbs, you don't want to get pregnant when she's doing them because that can be toxic for
so
baby.
While she's taking the parasid, she should be sure not to get pregnant.
Yeah. Yeah. So make sure she's actively preventing pregnancy. I know she's tried for 8 years, but you never know.
Uh-huh.
I mean, of course, if she does, you want to stop that immediately because some of the things in there, like the black walnut, and there's a bunch of stuff like that, black walnut and all that stuff. So she's already doing the parasit and that stuff, the artemisian for the gut. I would see if the berberine is included in that. And if not, get the berberine. Get her to get her hemoglobin A1C retested. Have her recheck her iron and ferritin. And I'd look to get her onto a different multi. Rainbow Light has a really nice prenatal, which would be preparing her for getting
that
into pregnancy.
Rainbow?
Rainbow Light. And Thorne and a bunch of other good companies have a good multivitamin that's prenatal so that she could just transition right into pregnancy from it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think Caver keep working on the parasite stuff, but I would start working on supporting her adrenals, the B vitamins, especially the B6, you know, the whole thing we put out together with the protocols for stage 3.
Right.
Get her adrenals working, but her blood sugar is big. Her blood sugar is big. That would be the biggest red flag I see here. Those are the three areas I would really focus on. Her basic diet that's going to support all three. Right? A good diet's going to support all three. Some B vitamins is going to support it all. The chromium for her blood sugar maintenance. And she can continue on the parasit and the other stuff as well.
Okay.
Yeah. The B vitamins are just good insurance policy. So if she doesn't want to go get an, you know, like a 23andMe or BMTHFR tested, but it is a common in infertility like that, I wouldn't be surprised if she had a homozygous MTHFR.
Okay.
And that combination of an MTHFR SNP and gluten and PCOS, it's lethal for trying to get pregnant. You got to get those under control.
Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Any other questions?
No, I think that's good for now, for sure.
Yeah.
She was, sorry, one more question.
Sure.
After we discovered that she had the parasite, she was taking the parasite, the Candida Forte, and the liver support,
mm-hmm.
and then she started getting a headache. So we said, okay, and getting dizzy. So we throttled back and she stopped everything for about 4 days. The headache went away. She started back on the wow, I just drew a blank.
The parasit,
yes, thank you. She started back on that with no symptoms. So then she added back the Candida formula and didn't have a headache from that. So I'm wondering, do I try and have her add back in the liver support or just let it go and pretty much assume that was likely, you know, maybe
no,
even
would,
helping her
I would
detox.
Add that to her. And if she gets the headache, then you know for sure that that's what it was. Because oftentimes people get headaches when you don't give them liver support when they're doing parasite cleanses because, you know, suddenly these parasites are throwing off, they're dying and they're throwing off all their endotoxins. And you really, you know, it's important to do liver support. So it was a good thing for you to do. So I would just try it. And if she gets the headache, then she stops it. And, you know, there's something in that liver support that maybe is pushing it too fast.
And so if she does get a headache again, is there something else that we need to be doing to support her liver other than that supplement?
Yeah, you can, if she's willing to do it, you can actually just get her some milk thistle seeds and have her just grind them up and add it to salads and stuff. That can be helpful. You can look at getting some like dandelion root tea, burdock. Just so pick some of the liver support nutrients, but do them individually and just see, right?
Yep.
There may be something in there, you know, without knowing what's in her liver support formula. It just could be something that she's sensitive to or that triggers an increased circulation to her brain, which causes more blood flow.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it has ginkgo in it. I often get a headache if I take anything with ginkgo in it because it increases blood circulation to the brain.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. That was really helpful.
Sure. You're welcome. Thanks for the questions. It's awesome. Okay, so I have also, let's see, a practitioner. I have a blood work from, oh, no, I don't want to cancel it. Why is it 15 minutes to download that thing you just sent me? Okay, no, it's going. So Lynn just sent me Jane's. So I'm going to close Allie and open Jane. Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Hi. Okay, now it says 1 minute remaining. That's weird. I think next time don't send it. It's 2 minutes remaining? What? Send it to me via email, please, Lynn. It's not working on Skype. It's going up and down. 2 minutes, 1 minute, 3 minutes, 5 minutes. Now it says 1 minute again. I don't know what it is.
There's one file that's a scan, and it might be large.
Okay. Now it says 59. Now it's one. Yeah. 52 seconds, 58 seconds, 42 seconds. It should be done. It's going up and down. How weird. Okay. So tell me a little bit about what we're going to be looking at, and we'll be ready for it.
So essentially, over the summer, I've been kind of I did labs. I did a hormone profile, and then my labs also had thyroid in it. And back in March, I had done the adrenal, it showed that I had stage 2 adrenal fatigue. So I went on a lot of the supplements except for the pregnenolone and DHEA because I reacted to it. But I did all the rest of the supplements, and I've actually been feeling better and having a little bit more energy. And then I did some stupid food testing this summer that went very, very bad.
Oops.
And I think the lab test, the blood test was, I think, either during or right after that phase where I had done something really wacky.
Okay.
So the big thing for me is that I still suffer from constipation, and I can't seem to do anything to remedy this. And I just wanted to when I uploaded the file today on the INE website, I put in all the I don't know if you have that, but I wrote in all the supplements that I'm taking.
Okay, she's sending it to me. Send me everything in the email, Lynn, and then I'll look at it. Okay, so that's your supplements and everything. Okay.
So I just want to see if there's something that I'm missing. The latest was the I did the ultimate hormone profile. And I actually thought it was better than I thought it was going to be. And it wasn't my hormones, but what I found in the thyroid one is that my my antibodies, my TPO,
mm-hmm.
I'm at 13.
Hmm. Okay. So you've got a mild Hashimoto's going on there. Was that the antithyroglobulin or the TPO?
TPO.
Oh, okay. Yeah. The TPO has a lower threshold. Antithyroglobulin does. So antithyroglobulin, even on the labs, they say it should be under 1. So anybody that's above 1, I know it's pretty bad with the TPO. There's definitely some activity going on there. It doesn't mean you're in a raging autoimmune response at this point. You know, I just think of it as under 10. I like to see it in the single digits for sure,
okay.
Like under 5. If it's in the 8 or 9, I always warn. I say, look, you know, let's get you on just all the preventative things you do, like getting off gluten and getting off your allergens and doing a lot of antioxidants just to prevent it. If it's in the 13, I may be a little bit more strong in saying that. You know, certainly if it's over 20, I'm concerned.
But I think, though, the 13, I think this, when I did this lab test, I had had a gluten reaction.
I had recently had
gluten.
Okay. Well, there you go. So it kind of
triggered
it.
So that's possibly why I'm not. So that may be why that's high. I don't know. So, and I'm going to want to take the test again.
Okay.
But I know that in the past, like 10 years ago, I was tested. They did that, the test on the fat. I don't know what they call that. I'm not sure which lab it was. And I wasn't converting my fat. And so
fatty acid test, you mean? Like when
I think it was that. I don't have it in front of me, but it was done 10 years ago, and I'm just wondering if I should redo it now.
Okay. So these are questions. Let's look at what's going on here. And Lynn, I didn't get, I'm looking to see where Lynn said she was sending me the rest of it by email. I just have your practitioner report, so I'll take a look at that to begin with. But Lynn, I haven't seen the other one, so please go ahead and send that. All right, so I can share this on the screen if anybody wants to go to join.me. That would be helpful. That's usually a helpful way to do it. Go to join.me and just take a look at the screen. And I'm going to pull your thing up again. Here we are. And if I go here, I will share it. Share window. Okay. So I'm just looking at I'm just going to look at the numbers. Your glucose is 89, so it's a little higher than I like to see it. Let's see what else. You're a little on the acid side. Your carbon dioxide's 22. I like to see it above 25. Your protein's a little bit low. Your globulin's a little bit low. So there may be some, what do you think might be causing those things to happen, the proteins to be out of whack?
Well, I know there's got to be digestive issues. For sure. Which doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. Hypochlorhydria is very common cause of constipation too. So these things may be tied in. Do you do any support for HCL, beta reserve, zinc, or all
of that? I'm actually doing an HCL enzyme right now that has pepsin and a bunch of other enzymes in it. And I do have bitters to do before meals. I'm just not very good at remembering to take them.
I know how that goes. So I'm a little concerned about an enzyme formulation that has HCL in it, because oftentimes the HCL will start the breakdown of those proteins,
it
so we generally don't take
not
them
have,
together?
It does not have HCL in it.
Okay. It's just the enzymes. Got it.
It's just the enzymes and pepsin. But they call it HCL. This company doesn't believe that you should be taking HCL. I was just trying it.
Okay. How long have you been taking that one?
Probably a month and a half, maybe.
Okay. So before you took this test. I mean, after you took this test, sorry.
Yeah.
And what were you on when you took this test? Were you on any specific supplements? Is that what's in the note that you sent? Because I still haven't gotten it. I'm looking.
Yeah, I pretty much everything, I can send it to you.
Let's see. Here it is, Jane's Files.
So the very first one, the current supplements, the digestive enzyme I was not on when this test happened. And I was not on the DHEA.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not on the elixirs.
Okay. Why am I not being able to open this? Jane's Files. It's loading it. Oh, it must be a big attachment.
It's a scan.
Okay, got it. All right, let me see if I can get the VCF. What is it? Okay, wait. It's not even. Wow.
Everything should be PDF. Everything was PDF.
Interesting, though. It's not. It's like it's clogging up the system. It may be still downloading. That's what must be what it says. Because if I click on other messages, it opens them up. But this one just sits there. Okay, so let's look at this while that's downloading. All right. So we're suspicious of low stomach acid here. Calcium phosphorus ratio is increased, which would mean your phosphorus is on the low side. Your calcium is on the, that's on the low side too. Interesting why that calcium phosphorus ratio would be off like that. That doesn't even make sense. That doesn't make sense because they're both normal and neither one is at the extreme. of the opposite extreme. Alkaline is low, so super, super. What's the nutrient? Do you remember what the nutrient is that's associated with alkaline phosphatase?
No.
Zinc.
Okay, yeah.
And yours is ultra, super, super low. Okay, so zinc's important. Zinc's super important. And I would get a liquid zinc because the capsules, it's just going to be harder to break down. And ionized liquid zinc is going to be the best to get in. And that you have that vicious cycle, remember, where you need zinc in order to create HCl. You need HCl in order to break down zinc, right? Exactly. So zinc is a big issue here. You can get the liquid zinc and taste test it, like the zinc tally or assay from one of those companies. You're also probably low in B6 as well, because your AST and ALT and GGT is on the lower side, but those two are very low. I mean, ALT is super low, and those are B6 dependent. So I would say B6 and magnesium. I mean, B6 and zinc, and those are important for menstrual stuff too, because I know you get a little wonky at your menstrual period. So the B6 might be important there.
So I do take B6 liquid. I'm taking about 50 milligrams per day. So should I be upping that?
Wow. Were you taking it before you took this test?
I think I had just started a month or two prior. So, And I'm also taking a multi-B.
So you're getting a lot of B6. And is it in the form of P5P?
It's Premier Research. I don't know.
So their liquid zinc, their liquid B6 is not 50 milligrams.
Unless I read the bottle wrong.
Yeah, because their liquid B6 is a very low dose. And when people need very high doses, they usually supplement it with something in addition. Take a look at that, because that might be 5 milligrams versus 50.
Yeah, maybe I read it wrong. It is small print.
No. Just missed the little dot. Yeah, I would say you would need more in the range of 50 milligrams of P5P. So you can keep taking what you're taking, but add to it if you want to. Like add a, like Thorne or somebody like that has the P5P in a capsule. Ah, good. It came through.
Yeah, I'm tired of taking it. I have too many capsules. I have too many pills right now, and it makes me nauseous.
I don't know how. I have not seen it in a powder either. That's the problem with the B6. You might just have to temporarily just bite it and do that. Let me look at some other numbers to see if there's other indications. I'm going to print this one so that I can, at least your list, so I can be out back and forth, because if I have to keep switching screens, it's not going to be that hot, that easy for me. So file, print. Okay, so I'm printing it. And then I'll look to see if there's other indications. So let me make it through. So B6 zinc. LDH, yeah, all of these liver enzymes, when they're low, indicate the B6 zinc. Some kind of cofactor is missing. Oh, so much
so that's
for that.
I'm probably missing the zinc.
Yeah. Yep.
And this does say on the Premier Research, a quarter a teaspoon is actually 61 milligrams.
Really?
Yep.
And it's P5P?
Yep.
Well, they must have changed their formula. Okay.
Yep.
I hate to see you go higher than that.
I'll do the zinc and see if that helps.
And see what happens. Yeah, because that's pretty, I've never put people on more than 50 or so of the P5P. If I'm doing just straight B6, so like pyridoxine hydrochloride, then I'll oftentimes go higher. Sorry, I'm changing my printer paper so I can see your supplement list. Okay. Not doing it.
I can read it off.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's a lot on it. Okay. Let me see if I can just shrink this window a little bit and have them next to each other. So here's what I'm saying. Symptoms, constipation, gas, gained a couple of pounds, but holding weight. Cooked foods tend to digest better than raw. Do use fermented. Stage 2 adrenal tested in March 2015. Fatigue improved on being on supplements. Green smoothies make you tired at times. So is it all the time when you have green smoothies or specific times a day?
Typically, if it's closer to the lunch hour.
Interesting. hair loss, better when eating a small amount of animal products, eggs or chicken, crave beef, been vegan for a week, and the hair loss is worse. Interesting. So noticed a correlation with starting fish oil, but that's not helping. Exercising, walking 3 miles or bicycling. Weight doesn't go down. Meditating at least a half an hour a day. Tendency towards depression. The summer was bad, but I was also testing my diet, so which didn't go well. And that's where the gluten experiment came in, or is that an accidental exposure?
No, it was a gluten experiment.
Okay. So it didn't go well? Or it didn't?
Nope. Well, it gluten wasn't good for me.
Confirm that it wasn't the right thing for me. See, you're 900 milligrams. D6000 IUs. DHEA 2.4, working up to 5, B6 liquid. Okay, cool. The B6, yeah, that's good to know because I was shying away from that liquid because it was so low dose, and they must have changed the formula from when they first pulled it
out. And it's actually 61 milligrams per day, not the 50 that I have there.
Wow. So the raw iron from Vitamin Code, and has that helped with the anemia?
I don't know. Did I test that? Let me look and see if I retested that.
Okay.
I think it did. I think it helped. I didn't retest the ferritin. I know that.
Okay. So let's just see.
Iron. Oh, they did. It did help the serum iron.
Okay, good.
It's at 104.
It's at 104, yeah. And where was it before?
Oh, it was lower. I know it was low, okay. But I don't remember what it was before.
Would you say that most of the stuff that you're that you listed here, you were taking at the time this test was, or did you do them in response
the
to
only,
this test?
Yeah, the only things I was not taking was the digestive enzyme, the DHEA, and like I said, the elixirs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So your free T3, they mark your TSH as being high. I mean, it's relative. I'm not concerned about the TSH being a little high. Your free T3 is a little bit low, but it's pretty close to the bottom of the range. So I'd be looking at a conversion issue because your total T4 is 7. Your free T4 is right there too. Okay, so your free T4 and your free T3 are at the lower ends of the range, the T3 being out. So, and the total is pretty good. So there could be an excess estrogen going on because estrogen causes an increase in the thyroid binding globulin.
And I don't have an excess of estrogen.
So here's the thing though, excess estrogen may not show. And this is something I've been thinking a lot about lately. It could be xenoestrogens that are binding the sites and are acting like estrogens, but not really. So that's something I haven't really done a lot of research on, but I got real curious about that this weekend and like revisiting some of the pathways. So it's possible that your estrogens will show up because I've seen this a few times where I was suspicious that there might be increased thyroid binding globulin. You could always check it, but.
So that has nothing to do with the TPO?
Well, the TPO generally doesn't affect the thyroid binding globulin.
Oh, okay.
Let's see, it looks better. So here's what I would look at. If I had that sheet, there's a sheet that I did through the thyroid program where I put up the Dr. Ryan's thing where you look at where the free T4 and where the free T3 is. I think they'd be just ever so slightly skewed. Your free T4 is right at the low end of the range. Your T3 is right below that. So they're pretty close. So I'm not necessarily suspicious of a conversion issue.
Okay.
But a potentially a thyroid binding globulin issue because both of them are low and your total T4 is pretty darn good. Did you do the thyroid globulin?
No, I didn't do that.
Yeah, no, we usually don't do that. So MCV is a little bit on the high side, which is B12 typically. It could be folate B12. It could be the B6 actually. quite frankly. Maybe your B12 and folate are good, but the B6 is off. For some reason, it's not being absorbed. That's a good thing to look into. So RDW, and I'm just like going through my typical thought process of going through this a first time, and then there's a second pass through. So RDW is high. RDW is an early indicator of anemia. Yours is just a little bit above the range. So to me, that says that your iron looks good. Your MCV is a little high, which means that you probably B12 folate or B6 or a combination. And that's what's reflected in this RDW. Neutrophils are a little high. What's your white blood cell counts? What's your total white blood cell? Did I miss it? Oh, lymphocytes, no. RDW. It must be back at the beginning. Here, total white blood cells. Your total white blood cells are within the range, but your neutrophils are a little on the high side. Usually when neutrophils are elevated, it's more related to a bacterial infection, and lymphocytes could be more of a viral. It could be that you have something like maybe a gut dysbiosis type of thing going on where there's an imbalance in the bacteria there or an overgrowth. It's not severe by any stretch. It's just slightly outside of the mm-hmm. range. It's well within the normal lab range, so we wouldn't be looking for an overt infection, but we could be looking for an occult infection.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, everything else looks good in your blood cell counts. Okay, so that's just the thing. Have you always had slightly elevated cholesterol?
I have had in the past, yes.
Okay.
But I've also been eating more animal product
mm-hmm.
than I normally do, or mm-hmm. I was, over the course of since probably March, February or March.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't surprise me.
Okay, so triglycerides are good. Here we go. LDL is higher than I'd like to see it. I like to see that generally. What? They put zero in their ideal range? Oh, the low is zero. No. Okay. So you're still within what they consider ideal. I've seen it in different places, like 120, 100. And your triglyceride HDL ratio is good. So, yeah, it just might be that it's not that big a deal because your triglycerides, your cholesterol, HDL is pretty good. So that's not a concern. You'd have a tendency to have slightly higher cholesterol if your thyroid hormone is out of balance. Hypothyroid tends to predispose there. Let's see what they say on there. Okay. So it could be the higher concentration of animal products compared to what you've been used to is thrown off your acid-base balance. So I would start looking mm-hmm. at the acid-alkaline chart and start to get as much as 80% of your food from the alkaline side.
And I am.
Okay.
I'm doing more because I was concerned, especially with the hair loss, that it was a protein issue. So
yeah.
I started I'm getting rid of the grains, but I even the quinoas and stuff, I've had problems with that before. Mm-hmm. And but I'm going more towards the legumes to try to get, you know, more protein and also protein powders.
Okay.
I was trying to save as much vegan as possible. And then
yep.
every few days bring in, you know, just have some animal product.
Yeah. So it is most likely a protein and zinc will be contributing to those sorts of things. So if you're not absorbing enough, naturally when you start to eat animal products, there's a higher percentage of protein in them and you're able to get more in. So I would think that the protein powder, maybe even a second scoop of that a day while you're trying to get this under control. The other thing you might consider is an amino acid, a free-form amino acid supplement like a MAP or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. I have thought of that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, all these things I look at as temporary things. It's not stuff you want to stick to forever and ever.
Right.
It's just try to get you over the hump and, you know, to break some of these vicious cycles. Do you check your blood sugar?
I do. It's actually, I mean, every once in a while I do. I'll check it when my heart races to see if, usually if my heart races, then I know I've, you know, taken something in, and it's actually really sensitive because I can be in the high 80s, low 90s, and my heart will start racing. But I have, I've been okay, actually. I've been within range. Nothing's really spiked me. But it's, I think it's more of a fat issue. I think it's more of a receptor, I think, because I've always had that fat conversion.
Yeah, I would get that fatty acid test. You can get that through Direct Labs. Because I love those tests, and I've seen results so quickly by just adapting to what's on the test. Because you can go too far in the extreme of omega-3 if you start to supplement. Plus, it's kind of expensive and gross to be taking more fish oils than you really need.
Yeah, should I be, because I'm on fish oils right now, should I get off of it for a little bit?
There's two ways to do retests, and you can make a decision as to which way you want to go with it. One is that you can test to see if what you're doing, how what you're doing right now is affecting you. So since you've been on it for a while, you can look at doing the test while you're on it. And that will give you an idea of, oh, well, I'm on too much or too little. If you go off of it, then you don't really know what the effect of what you were doing before was on you. So I kind of prefer that you stay on them.
Okay.
And that'll give you an idea. And then if it's super high, then you know you have to cut back. And if it's still low, then you know you just need to increase. Otherwise, if you go to baseline, then you're going to be playing again. You're going to have to test more regularly to figure out what your optimal amount is. So I think it's best to stay on it.
Okay.
That's true. Same thing with like an adrenal. If you're retesting your adrenals, don't go off your adrenal supplementation to test it, because then you don't know how well the adrenal supplementation is working for you and you're back to ground zero. Mm-hmm. So I just prefer to test to see what your current state of supplementation is doing. And that's a really good test. For those who don't know it, the simple one is the blood spot fatty acid from Genova Metametrics, and it's just you poke your finger, you send the card in, and they give you the omega-3s, all the different metabolites of omega-3 and 6, and then the ratios and the index, the omega-3 index. And the more advanced test is you have to go and get your blood drawn, and then there's much more expansive, and they give you all the different, the omega-9s and the saturateds, and they give you, a 2 or 3 page list of the different things that they test. I generally don't do that except in the case where I'm suspicious of things like MS or other, you know, demyelinating diseases or really long-term inflammatory conditions. But usually I just start with the simple one.
Okay, so the blood spot, and that was with what lab?
Genova or Metametrics.
Genova, okay.
Yeah, we have it listed on our site if you want to order it there, or Direct Labs can do it, or you can just go directly to the company if they'll do it for you.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so zinc needs shows up right at the top. Thiamin.
Yeah.
B6, mm-hmm. B12, so we talked about all of these, right? Vitamin C, you might is very low need. Iodine's low. So, yeah, I would say focus on those nutrients and focus on the stomach acid. The zinc might help to boost the stomach acid production. Are you doing like a bitters formula, or are you just doing a little juice before meals? How are you doing it?
I have a bitters, the spray.
Which brand is it? I've never seen a spray.
I don't have it in front of me. I don't remember the brand of it. But there's just a bitter spray. That I found online.
So whenever you try certain supplement combinations that you think are going to work and they don't, it's often a good idea to just switch and try different brands, because different formulations are going to be different and they'll affect different people different ways. So I've found good results with the Herbalist and Alchemist blend, because David Winston, who created it, knows his stuff better than anybody I know in terms of the interactions between the nutrients and, you know, warming bitters versus cooling bitters, and he's created a pretty good formula. It's not as easy to get as just going to the health food store and buying a bitters. You have to order it online, but it could be a worthwhile endeavor to do.
Okay. The one that I'm on, it's called Urban Moonshine.
And what are the ingredients?
Dandelion, burdock, orange peel, fennel, yellow dock, jelica root, destination ginger. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like a good one.
I don't remember what it looks pretty good. I just haven't used it consistently.
Ah, yeah. So the consistency is the important, and that's why, you know, any of the stuff we're trying to get the stomach acid back is a, it's usually a really long-term process with people because the consistency is really hard. It's really hard. So.
Yeah, I'm more consistent with taking the enzyme than I am spraying before a meal.
Is it because you don't remember to do it before and you remember as soon as you start eating? Yeah.
Yeah.
And you could just delay eating when that happens. I mean, that's always a challenge, but, you know, you just say, okay, well, I'm just going to, I didn't do it. I just remembered it. I'm going to just wait another 10 minutes.
Yeah, I'll just put it out on my calendar. I'll just put it out on my counter. That way I'll remember it.
You remember it while you're making. So the herbalist and alkalist is not that different from what you just said. He's got artichoke, dandelion, gentian, angelica, orange peel, and peppermint. So it sounds like a good one. Some of them are a little lame as far as I'm concerned. They just have one or two ingredients, and you never know if that's going to work.
Yeah. But,
yeah, consistency then.
Good, good.
Yeah.
One of the things, you know, since I was stage 2 adrenal fatigue, and I did that comprehensive, the ultimate hormone profile, and there were a couple interesting things that the doctor had told me in there, because I had asked, because I had tried the pregnenolone, the DHA way back when, and I'm like, and it just, I felt like it was making me crazy. And in this hormone profile, she thought that my progesterone was fine, and that what I really needed was just the DHEA.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, when you do both of them together, she said, the problem is the progesterone, you never know where it's going to be utilized, and sometimes you can overdose if you take them together. And she said, if you're going to take them separately.
Mm.
So I went, oh, well, that makes complete
that
sense.
That makes sense.
Because she said you could be overdosing because it could all go to DHEA, and then you have too much DHEA because it's down the same line. And I'm like, oh, that's really helpful, because I had another client who had the same reaction, and then we just took our off of it. So I decided just to try the DHEA. And the other thing she told me was, and I don't know if you've heard of this, it's called the seed rotation diet.
Mm-hmm. I just heard of it. In fact, it was on a Meridian Valley consult the other day, and I'd heard of it before, but I never really looked into it. And I just started somebody on it the other day, so we'll see.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting because I have this spotting issue every month, and for people who don't know what it is, it's essentially days 1 through 14 of the menstrual cycle, you're taking estrogenetic seeds, so flax and pumpkin, and I need to look this up and research it a little bit more. I haven't done it. And then from day 15 to through your menses, you're taking progesterone seeds, so they'd be sunflower and sesame, and I thought, oh, that was interesting.
Yeah,
so
I
started kind of doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to look into that, too. I haven't seen the science behind it, like why those are – I know why flax is estrogenic, but I don't know – I've never heard of sunflower and sesame being considered progesterogenic herbs.
Yeah, I don't either. I have to look into it, too. So it sounded very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Cool. You made some good notes on here, too. So for those of you who don't know or have never done these tests before – you have an account with Meridian where you can order these tests, and then you can get on the phone with them and they'll interpret. And I still do it. I've been doing these tests for like 3 or 4 years, but I still, every time I have a patient, it's worth the investment of my time. It used to be I'd be on where for an hour with them trying to have them explain it to me, and now it's, you know, 10 or 15 minutes. But there's usually one or two little things that they point out that I hadn't thought about. So it's really worthwhile to do. And you made some good notes. So did she say to supplement iodine? You're right there. One is the minimum. You want it to be greater than one. So you're right there at the verge of it.
To supplement with what?
Iodine.
Oh, yes, definitely. I've added, well, now that I'm doing kind of the thyroid elixirs, I have kelp. So I don't know if that's enough, or should I do an iodine supplement?
You know, given that you're right at the edge, I'd say you're probably fine with the kelp, because kelp is pretty concentrated. If you were like at a 0.1, I just did somebody, she was a 0.1. There's no way she's going to eat enough kelp to get her up there. And the other way to to figure out if you need more iodine than that would be to do an iodine load test. The thing about iodine is it displaces bromine and fluorine. So if you've got a buildup of bromine and fluorine, when you take high doses of iodine, it starts to displace those from their receptor sites, which is a good thing because you don't want bromine and fluorine on your breast tissue and pancreas and prostate tissue and all these other places that have receptors. But you also, you have to be careful because as it displaces the bromine and the fluoride, it can end up causing problems like detox type reactions. People just feel really loopy and weird and all that. So I will usually do like a lot of vitamin C when I have them on that. And David Brownstein recommends a whole teaspoon a day of salt to help to pull that off, especially if you know the person has bromine or fluoride toxicity. Looks like somebody's put in a question on the type here. Let's see. Lynn said that's the one she uses too, your bitters. And Lynn just posted a nice little article on the seed rotation diet. And somebody, I don't know who's viewer three, but asking me, who asked me what your thoughts on Meridian Valley profile versus Dutch? Jamie. Yeah, Jamie, I haven't done enough of the Dutches. I've done maybe three or four of them. I was just at the conference, the Restorative Medicine Conference, and they had a special for practitioners, and I bought a bunch of kits for it. I wish I could have bought more kits for it, but they only let me buy five. But I bought five kits, and I've already given one out, and I've got a couple of other people lined up to do it. So I would just really like to see how they compare. They have most of the same stuff on them, and I actually had one patient who did the Dutch. She did the Meridian Valley, and then like less than a month later did the Dutch before she started really doing a protocol to correct it, and they were fairly similar. I do like the Dutch is from Precision Analytics. I forget what the Dutch actually stands for, but it's similar to this test, only you do it with spot urine four times throughout the day, which from a patient compliance standpoint is so much better. Like, how fun was it to carry around your jug all day and collect every morsel of urine you peed for 24 hours? Most people say it's horrendous, especially if they're working. So this just is these little strips. You go in and you pee on the strips, and then you send in the strips, and they're 4 points throughout the day. For the estrogens, progesterones, et cetera, they just add everything together and average it out. But for the cortisol, then you get the measures of the four-point cortisol, which is really nice, and you get the metabolites at the different points, which I really liked. Dried urine test for comprehensive hormones. That's what it stands for. Thank you, Lynn. Yeah. So the jury's out on that. I will be teaching both of the tests. The thing about Dutch is they do have some really good videos. I haven't watched them yet, but I just kind of glanced to see what they have, and they have a lot of videos that explain the test. But the main thing is with any of these tests is that the typical way that an MD is going to test for you for your estrogen is they just do estradiol in the serum. Some of them get a little fancy, and maybe they'll do estrone, and maybe some of them will do estriol, but rarely. And they just give you an assessment based on that. That's not accurate because you can have, somebody can have decent levels of estrogen, but the ratios are bad and the ratios are dangerous. So, for example, Jane did the estrogen quotient, which is taken by taking estriol and dividing it by estrone plus estradiol. So that for her came out to be exactly one, and you can see that here. It's pretty close to one. If that was really low, that puts her at risk of estrogen dominance, even if her numbers are low. So even if her total estrogens are low, but she's got just a lot less estriol, estriol is the protective estrogen. The other estrogens can be more proliferative in terms of hormone-sensitive tissue and cancers. So that's one ratio that's important. The other ratio is here. She looked at this one. It's the 2:16 ratio. The 2-hydroxyestrone is protective. She's got a good hefty number there of 12.5. The 16 can be not so protective, let's just say, with breast cancer, but it's protective of bone. So it's kind of the Goldilocks principle of you don't want the 16-hydroxy to go too low. And hers is a little on the high end of the range, where her 2-hydroxy is at the lower end of the range. So her ratio is probably a little higher than I would like to see it. A little lower than I would like to see it. Sorry. You're at 1.9, and you want that to be higher. So you're at 1.9. The low end of the range is 1.8. I'd love to see those ratios somewhere in the 3.5 to 4 area. If they get too much higher than that, then you don't have enough 16, and then people are at higher risk for osteoporosis. And we will go through this test in detail. This is probably the second or third one that we've done on one of these calls. So you're just going to get a hint of it a little bit, and then we'll go into a lot more detail when we do that module. And then the 4s you want as low as you possibly can get them, and those are the most carcinogenic. She wrote down brassica, and the reason is that the brassicas really help to keep this ratio intact and also to prevent us from going down to the 4-hydroxy. And we have a really cool chart, and they send it to you with this, that you can look at the whole metabolism of this. And I have a good chart in, I think I did it in the adrenals. I don't remember which one I did it in. In one of the modules, I have the chart which shows the food and the cofactors. Iodine's super important for this. It converts the 16 up into the estriol, right? So if she goes and does some like more dim or broccoli sprouts, you know, the brassicas that have more of the sulforaphanes in them, that's going to help more of the 16 to convert to more of the estriol. But there have been times when I've talked to Meridian, they're like, well, is this person on DIM or I3C? Because if they are, you need to get them off of it because they're over converting their 16 to their estriol. And I've had that happen. And we've had to back them off. You know, somebody who just goes gung-ho and a little's good, more is better. And they start taking everything. You know, they're taking broccoli sprout powders, DIM, which is diendylmethane, I3C, indole-3-carbinol. And they're just like going crazy because they know how good brassicas are for them. And suddenly they're at risk for osteoporosis. So that's not the case here. Let's see. And then this methoxies are converted from the hydroxies in the presence of enough methylation groups. So people who have MTHFR and other methylation SNPs are not going to produce as much of the methoxies, and sometimes you have to give them. So she wrote down here, yeah, SAMe is one, methylfolate and methylcobalamin. And we saw that on the blood test too, saying you needed a little bit more because yours are pretty darn low in your methoxies. This one's not too bad, but it's still at the very low end of the range. Okay, so yeah, so I think going back to what showed up on the blood, there's a consistency here between them, is that, you know, getting some of the methylated folates and B12s are going to be helpful. Did you have any particular questions on this next page? Because I don't want to go through and explain the whole test because it'll take up all the time. But what are your particular questions here?
No, I don't have any particular questions. I just threw it in there just because I wanted to bring up those two points that I had learned. So I mean, you can move on. I'm really good. What you're saying is exactly kind of what I was getting on things that I needed to add as far as the iodine and the zinc. And yeah, it's perfect. Thank you.
Good. Sure. Okay, great. Yeah, and well, this is just a tease. You'll get a lot more of this. Usually you run this test on day 19 is what they recommend. And it, obviously, if somebody's postmenopausal, you just run it whenever. But they like to run it on day 19. Now, if you don't run it on day 19, because they give you the different ranges, right, they give you the luteal phase. And that's what day 19 would be in the luteal phase, which is the second half of the cycle after ovulation. Postmenopausal has a different range. But if you were to do it, like some of these actually have some numbers posted for mid-cycle or follicular being the early part of the cycle, mid-cycle is, you know, right, the 2 days on either side of ovulation. And then luteals after ovulation. But you see that a lot of these don't even have numbers posted, like ranges of what we'd expect in those ranges. So I just like to go with what they say, which is around day 19. If you have somebody who has a much shorter cycle, then you're going to calculate the luteal phase back from there. You may be doing it at day 17 if they have like a much shorter cycle. If they have a much longer cycle, it's a little harder to predict, but you can go up there. Okay, so thank you. Good question. So we're going to move on. Where are we? Let me go back to, let me just pause the screen share so I can go back to my other screen. It looks like Lynn said that Let me put your hand down. And then it looks like, I didn't see this, but is Laura just submitted, would like to, okay, health tracker she would like. I don't see Laura. So let me, Glenn has his hand up, so let me open Glenn up. Hi, Glenn.
Hello, Marie. Marie, how are you doing?
Good, thank you. How can we help you today?
My health boss is elevated, and it has been over the last few years, but the recently when I had it taken, it was a quite a bit higher. It was 248.
Mm-hmm.
So I did the isoenzymes, and it's not bone because the bone was well within the range, but the ALP-FOS, it was high. It showed high for the ALP-FOS part of the isoenzymes.
Which one? Wait. So you said the bone one. What? Which one was elevated? Was it liver? Was it gut?
Well,
cardiac.
The doctor said that let's do isoenzymes, and I didn't know that much about the isoenzymes. He just said let's do them. So he took blood, and it did the ALP-FOS again. It was a little bit lower. It came down to 237, and they did one for bone.
Usually they do four isoenzymes. If you go back into our blood testing module, they talk about, and I can't remember which exactly ones they are, but there's usually four isoenzymes that they do. You just say isoenzymes, and it does all of them. I'll show it on the screen.
I knew there were more for a different, I can't remember which one. I knew there were more, but I didn't really know. And he just said, well, let's do them. And he did, we did one for bone, but it was well within the range, and then we did one for liver, and it was elevated.
Oh, okay, so the liver was the one that was elevated. Got it. Yeah, that's what I was getting at. So there's some liver stuff going on. Now, what other, do you have other liver enzymes that are elevated or on the border of being elevated?
Well, the only thing is the AST was at 30,
okay,
and it had been within the functional range the other times I had it taken. I think it had been at 21, and the ALT had been at 23, which was in the functional range, and it was up to 52, so it a little bit more than doubled.
So your liver is having some stress. So it would be good to figure out why, but in the meantime, you want to protect it. And
I started on a liver rescue from Health Force.
Okay.
I'm doing that.
Okay, so that's a good thing. The other thing you might do is just buy some liver, some milk thistle seeds, and just start sprinkling them freely on things, and then recheck it. And I would recheck it in about 3 months.
Okay.
And if that's not enough, you either want to, I mean, do they look for any kind of viral things? Did they look for Hep C antibodies?
No, that's all they did.
Yeah, because that would be if you could either do that right away, or you could just go ahead and just address the liver, do the liver support, get the milk thistle amounts up. You usually need hefty amounts of milk thistle. I don't remember how much is in the liver rescue from Health Force, but it can't hurt to just add some extra as seeds, you know, as food seeds. Sprinkle them on your salads and things like that, make gomaccio out of them, things like that.
Okay, and you said it would not be a bad idea to check the Hep C antibodies?
I would check for Hep C antibodies, yep.
Okay. Well, something I noticed on the CBC, my white blood cells were okay, but the granulocytes are the same thing as neutrophils, right?
Yeah.
Okay. They were a little bit elevated. They were at 67.
Okay.
And the lymphs were low. They weren't even in the lab range. They were at 16, and my monocytes are elevated, and they always have been elevated. They're up near 13.
Okay. So what this is saying, Glenn, like when the monocytes are elevated and they're consistently elevated, it says that there's some kind of chronic infectious process going on.
Right.
Okay. So when you look at the lymph, these are numbers, right? These are not absolutes, the numbers you're giving me, but the percentages. So naturally, because everything has to add up to 100, if one of the compartments is higher, the other is going to be lower. So neutrophils are higher, therefore lymphs are lower. Okay?
Yeah.
So you'd have to look at the absolutes to see if your lymphs are probably truly not low. They're just a lower percentage. So That's not saying, usually if it's a like a Hep C or a chronic viral Epstein-Barr, something like that, you would see those liver, the neutrophils being low and the lymphocytes being high because it's a viral.
Right.
Not 100% because, right, there's textbook and then there's real life. But there might be some other thing going on there. There might be, like, you might want to look at some kind of gut bug. Like maybe an overgrowth of one of those, like Klebsiella's or some of the normal compensal organisms sometimes get out of whack. And I've seen people come back with horrendous bacterial overgrowth in their intestine.
Yeah.
Even without symptoms, which, you know, we know that you don't have to have symptoms in the gut. You can have symptoms elsewhere. But there's something that's putting some stress on your liver. You don't drink. I know that, right? And you haven't taken up drinking recently, have you? Okay. You don't do much of anything that's going to stress your liver from a dietary standpoint, except, you know, if you think about from a Chinese medicine standpoint, if you have any built up, pent up anger that needs to be released, that's something to work on.
Yeah, I do have that.
Okay. So there's something to work on to just take some of that stress off the liver. But the liver will be stressed if there's a consistent recycling through the enterohepatic circulation from the gut into the liver. If there's a gut infection, it can put a strain on the liver as well. The other things you could look for, and you can look for Hep C, you can look for, you know, EBV and all those sorts of things. But given your white blood cell differential, that's not high on my list of probables.
Okay, that's just something to think about maybe in the future. But
I would be looking at seeing how this liver rescue. But you really want to get to that's going to help you, right? That's going to help bring down the inflammation in the liver. But it is a Band-Aid, really. I mean, it's going to help heal if we don't figure out what the fire is that's causing your liver to get stressed. So in Chinese medicine, liver fire rising, right? That's an anger kind of thing that's going on in your liver. That can be contributing. Because these aren't huge numbers, quite frankly. These aren't, like in hepatitis, I would expect to see these numbers way bigger than what you're experiencing.
Yeah, because the doctor didn't seem alarmed at all. He said, well, they're not really that high. He didn't act like I needed to do anything like, it was really urgent that I do something really fast
because they're looking from a pathology standpoint, and your numbers aren't high enough for pathology. But because we're looking at it from a functional standpoint, we don't want to wait for functional imbalance to turn into pathology before you do something about it.
Yeah, and where I am right now, I don't have access to doing any testing. It's just not in the realm of possibility right now. So I'm just going to have to go from assuming that I probably do have gut bugs, because I don't have a lot of stomach upset, a whole lot of gas, things like that, but I still have the rumbling off and on.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of comes and goes, and I've been using oregano oil and garlic and things like that. And I'm kind of, right now, I'm just kind of cut off out here and limited. I have to go to farmers market to shop to even get anything organic right now. It's just the way it is. I got to make the best of my situation, and I just don't have. It's just not in my budget to do any testing. I'm just going to have to assume.
So you can assume, and you can. There's a lot of things you can do to try to get the bugs under control. I mean, how are your basophils and eosinophils?
They've always been good. They've always been within the functional range. But this last time, the basophils were at 1.8. They were a little bit elevated. The eosinophils were at 3. That's within the functional range.
It is. But it's still saying that there is some activity. So, again, like with these things, I prefer to see the eosinophils and the basophils down at practically nothing. So then where there's a little bit, it says that there's a little bit of maybe some allergy stuff and some possible parasite stuff going on.
I do have pretty severe airborne allergies right now.
Okay. So that would explain the eosinophils being up. So you could just assume there's some sort of gut dysbiosis going on there. You can look at some kind of combined formula, you know, of some berberine containing herbs, some the oregano for sure, garlic, and then what was the other one? Artemisia, in case there's a parasite going on. You could also look at just seeing what your probiotic status is. So I would say, you know, are you eating things like probiotic foods, sauerkraut, et cetera?
No, I just don't have access to that right now. I am taking a probiotic.
Okay.
But you
might want to reach out to Steph and ask her about your probiotic if there might be some better options for that, because sometimes, like, she had I don't know if you heard her radio show yesterday that I did with her, but we had a lot of good discussion on the probiotics and the different organisms, the five different organisms. So you may want to take a look at that.
I'm seeking health probiotics right now.
They're pretty high potency. They're pretty high potency. But it's a wide range. So I would work at supporting your liver in any case and just figuring out what's going on from the best of your perspective. Assume it's a gut bug. Assume you don't know what kind of gut bug it is. It's probably a bacterial overgrowth based on the neutrophils alone. Seeing what you can do to bring some balance there.
There's one more thing that I started noticing, that I was having a black coating on my tongue, and I thought, oh, my God, what is
black?
I thought it was really, yes, it's black and brown. And I looked it up on the Internet, and it said, well, it sounds scary, but it's just either too much bacteria or too much fungus.
Okay.
And so I've been brushing my tongue a lot better, and I've been doing more of the oregano oil. So I guess that maybe is a sign that I do have some type of overgrowth.
Yep.
And I'm pretty sure that I've got some mold and mildew growing in my house, and there's not a whole lot I can do about it at this point. I'm just going to have to just keep going and do the best I can.
Yeah. Well, if you're doing the Health Force Liver Rescue, you might consider doing their SCRAM, which is kind of and adding maybe some berberine to that. Berberine's a really good antimicrobial and bacterial in particular for the gut.
Yeah. What does Golden Seal have berberine?
Golden Seal does, but it's much more expensive than Oregon grapefruit. And even getting the extracted, if you get the berberine, like a complex of just berberine, usually they've extracted it from the less expensive and less endangered forms of berberine containing herbs, like Oregon grape and goldenrod, and there's a couple of others.
So I could get a supplement of Oregon grape.
You could get powdered Oregon grapefruit from or whole pieces of Oregon grapefruit, like actually the roots. That's your best bet. You get the roots. You can get them at Mountain Rose, and you just simmer up the roots and start drinking it. It's pretty bitter, but it's pretty strong and powerful. Or you could get berberine. Like Thorne has a Berber 500 product that's just pure berberine. Or you can get Oregon grape as a tincture. I just keep Oregon grape around as a tincture. So if I feel like there's, you know, a cold or flu going around, I load up with some Oregon grape and echinacea and garlic.
Okay, where can I get the tincture of Oregon grape?
Any health food store or online at any of this places, Amazon even. But any health food store would have Oregon grape. Like Gaia and what's this one I have? Herb Farm has it.
Well, I could get it on Amazon, right?
Yeah, you can get it on Amazon. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
You probably don't have a health food store in your neighborhood, so it's easier and quicker to just order on Amazon.
Yeah. I've been doing a lot of that lately.
Yeah. Amazon has pretty much everything that I use. It's really amazing that it's like a one-stop shop for everything.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And the seeds, the milk thistle seeds, you probably even get them on Amazon. I bought them there. I usually buy them in Mountain Rose, but Frontier probably has them. And Frontier, Amazon distributes for Frontier.
Okay. So Oregon grape and milk thistle seeds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's not possible to OD on milk thistle, is it?
Well, it's possible to OD on anything. I mean, it's all a matter of our bodies want what they want, and we don't want more. So you don't want to, like, eat pounds of it. Yeah, they have Frontier and Star West Botanicals both have milk thistle seeds. And the other things I've used, if you don't want to be grinding them, is I get milk thistle seed extract from Z Natural Foods. And it's just a powder. It's easier for me than having to grind them.
Yeah.
But I do.
Okay.
Yeah, and you can overdose on anything, even water, right? Anything in excess is going to put your body out of balance.
Yeah, but our bodies can't tolerate a lot of the milk thistle, though, right?
Yeah, I think you'd have to start looking up toxicity levels, the upper limit. I don't have off the top of my head. I don't remember what that might be.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
People with oxalate sensitivities can't do milk thistle because I think it's high in oxalates.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your help.
You're welcome. You're very welcome.
And you have a nice day.
Thanks. You too. Enjoy.
Goodbye.
Bye. Okay. Anybody else? I don't see... When did, Lynn, I'm going to open up your line. When did Laura submit her case?
Well, she told me, she sent me a message saying that she probably wouldn't be on, but she was wondering if you could at least speak to it.
Oh, okay. So she wanted me to do it anyway.
Yeah.
So Jamie just posted that he just found out that Seeking Health's probiotics are manufactured by Claire Labs. Interesting.
Well, and Steph mentioned Claire Labs yesterday.
Yeah, they have good stuff. She mentioned them in terms of the D-lactic acid-free probiotic.
Right.
Yeah.
And I've used them for my children.
Yeah. Sequoia says optimal range for vitamin A, 1.65 nanomoles per liter, said as being the normal range. Is that correct? I don't know what you're testing. Are you talking on blood levels? Or what are you looking at, Sequoia? I'm not sure. I don't usually test vitamin A. So, you might want to... I don't know if they even have that in the blood chemistry software to look it up there. So let's see. Where's Laura? You sent it to me on Skype? Let me find it.
Yep.
Laura, Master Health Tracker. Did she have particular questions? I mean, it's really hard to look at things because I don't have time to just take everybody's things and run through the whole shebang. So if she had a particular question, that would be.
She just said it's specifically her thyroid and iron and ferritin.
Oh, her iron. Yeah, that's right. The follow-up on her iron. Okay, got it. Okay, because we.
And you've got a call in about
7 minutes.
8 minutes.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to look at her. Is this hers? 925? But where's her previous ones?
That was what she sent me.
Because she was the one that had, she has a good vitamin D. Let me share this one. I'll just share it. Okay, so you guys can see it. Her vitamin D is in the 70s. That's, it's in the green range. Most people are not in the green range. She had a problem where her iron was super high, but her ferritin was low. But I don't see her iron in here at all. Thyroid. This is all it was the thyroid?
No, she said her iron and ferritin.
No, they're not in here, unless this is the wrong.
That's all she sent.
Laura Ricky, yeah, that's. I don't see it. Her CBC looks good. She's got some anemia still going on because it's 13.2, but it's just a little bit above the ideal range on her RDW. Her everything else looks good. Her MCV is 91, which would not reflect an iron deficiency at all unless she had superimposed B12 deficiency. Iron saturation. TIBC and ferritin. See, but I don't know what her serum iron is.
Okay, I found her tracker from before, from July, so I can send you that.
just look up with her iron. There she had her iron, her serum iron. Here I don't see her serum iron.
Okay, hold on.
Right. Her ferritin looks good. It's high. It's normal range, whereas before it was like 12, so it's definitely looking better. I don't know what her serum iron is. I'm going to guess her serum iron is pretty good based on those numbers. With Laura was on a call, and what happened was she had her iron had come up. It was like 160 or so. It was really high, and her ferritin was down in the teens. And I looked up, like, there's something wrong. There's something going on in your liver because you're not storing it. And we found this obscure article and talked about, you know, the ferrous and ferric forms of iron,
oh,
and that's
right.
A storage form. And in order to convert it to the storage form required melatonin.
And she's low in melatonin. Because she's been doing the light box and everything, though. So you're looking for which one now?
Serum iron. It's in the top part.
Okay.
Yeah, so what we did was we said, okay, well, she says, oh, my goodness, I had just gotten my BioHealth test back and my melatonin was low. So she had just started to supplement, and this would be curious.
Okay, it's
211.
It's 211.
Yeah, so I want to know what that is because it's not, yeah. So just write her back and say we need your serum iron in order to be able to see. What was her ferritin on that one? And FYI, guys, if you've got your your labs, it's best to put them on the same master tracker. That's the whole point of this, is to be able to compare.
It's 27.7, so it's really low.
27, so it went up to 55. So it looks like it's moving in the right direction, but we can't tell for sure without the serum iron. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Cool. Shared window is not – oh, I just closed the shared window, so it's going to tell me that – okay, let's see. I'll stop that. Okay, we've got to go now because I've got the VLM call, which is for we're going to be doing a lot of the grand call. It looks like a lot of people have already come in. So thank you all for being here on this call, and we're going to close down the INE call, the NEPT call right now, and then we're going to turn it over, and I'll stop the recording, and I'll start the recording again for the grand and VLM office hours call. So thanks, everybody. Great call. Bye-bye.